Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Short. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here for your WWE SmackDown audio review. Jake and I get together every Saturday and do this audio review for you guys. We talk about everything that's going on the SmackDown show. Look forward to upcoming pay-per-views, the matches we see coming out from there. And it happens for all the major shows on the site each week. Jason Powell does it for Raw on Monday nights. Will Pruitt does it for TNA Impact Wrestling, usually on Friday afternoons. But those are exclusive to our members, along with all the other audio we produce each week on the site. Over 6 hours of audio produced right here on ProWrestling.net for our members each week. In addition to the show reviews, Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett get together for the .net countdown, where they look at the best and the worst in professional wrestling each week. Jason Powell does a Q&A audio where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions for some fun. And then on Thursdays, Jason and I get together for our flagship show. We call it .net Weekly. We look at all the news of the week, often break news that hasn't made its way to the site. All of those audios are done every week, and in addition, we have several interviews left over from WrestleMania season that you should check out. Former WWE creative member Court Bauer came in for an interview, as well as wrestling legend Les Thatcher. Former WWE creative member Seth Mates joined Jason Powell and I for the WrestleMania audio review after that show on Sunday night. And just all kinds of audio still on the site of some of the older stuff. It's always there in our archives, interviews with Chris Jericho, Brock Lesnar, and others. All you got to do to have access to all of that is become a .NET member. Just head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page with a .NET member sign-up link, and you will get all the details for just $7.50 a month. You will get access to all that audio, the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and .NET member blog section. If you know you want to be a member for longer, you can take a six-month or an annual option that will save you some money. But go ahead right now, sign up to be a .NET member, check out all that audio from WrestleMania week, and again, the six-plus hours we produce each and every week here on the site. A lot of bang for your buck when you're a .NET member. But once you sign up, for those of you who took advantage of the special over WrestleMania weekend, just one more quick final reminder. It is a separate sign-up process to be in the .NET member forum. You can use the same credentials, username and password for that forum signed up as you did for your regular membership, or it can be something totally different. It's completely up to you, but it is a separate process, so just make sure you're signed up. You're automatically approved once you fill out the information and get started in the forum and chatting with us. It's a lot of fun. We've got a couple of new members, and it's been nice adding to the ranks. But let's talk about this SmackDown show, Jake. It was taped on April the 16th in Knoxville, Tennessee. Of course, it aired on April the 19th, on Friday night. And we're building towards Extreme Rules. We already know for Monday night, the World Heavyweight Championship match is going to be a triple threat. Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, and Alberto Del Rio. I drew a blank for a second there. Those three guys are going to be in a triple threat at Extreme Rules. No idea yet if it's going to be, you know, if it's going to be some sort of additional stipulation added. Triple threats by their nature are no DQ, so I'm sure we might see some shenanigans there. But what do you think about this as your World Heavyweight Championship match? And we talked in great detail both before and after WrestleMania about how weak the Del Rio and Jack Swagger feud had become. Ziggler's now been inserted with cashing in Money in the Bank. They're going with a triple threat first. So what do you think about this match?
Yeah, I think those are all still valid criticisms, to be honest. I mean, it's you know, there is some weakness there in that story between Del Rio and Swagger. I mean, I will say that I think they've done a fairly decent job since Ziggler has cashed in, you know, with the, you know, interference in matches and the you know, the match they had on Monday with Swagger and Ziggler, and also, you know, the match they had tonight between Del Rio and Swagger. I think they've done a fairly decent job of generating a little bit of interest in that match. You know, I think Del Rio in particular, you know, has looked more resilient as a babyface since, you know, having a leg injury and having to overcome that, both when Ziggler cashed in and subsequently, you know, with the attacks by Swagger. So that much, I think, you know, has at least helped it recover a bit, but I still think there's that underlying lack of interest there, you know, for anything that Swagger and Del Rio are doing. They still have a bit of work ahead of them, but I'm actually looking forward to the match itself. I think all three of these guys have have shown that they have at least somewhat decent chemistry in the ring together. So I'm looking forward to it, even though, you know, the story still leaves something to be desired.
Yeah, I mean, this has become the Intercontinental Championship back in the day used to be the workers' title, and that's kind of what the World Heavyweight Championship has become as of late, it looks like. This should be a great match at the pay-per-view, like you said, the match on Monday. I didn't like I did not like Ziggler jobbing out cleanly to Swagger there. That frustrated me. But, the match we got with Del Rio and Swagger was very good. Surprise ending on that one. You mentioned in the report, we'll talk about that match more when we get to it, that it was better down the stretch than it was in the WrestleMania match. So, I mean, this ought to be a good match, but the story is still weak, like you said. Ziggler's just kind of in the mix because he won via the cash-in. That brings, you know, the connection with Del Rio. And then, of course, Del Rio was injured because of Swagger, and that brings the tie-in there. So he's a much-needed jolt, I think, to that story because it's been bad. But I just want to get your thoughts on something outside of the show real quick. I don't know if you've had a chance to see the video or not, but I posted a video on Wednesday of an interview Arda O'Cal with The Score did with Sergeant Slaughter at this week's Cauliflower Alley Club. And he talked about how he was originally supposed to be the Zeb Coulter character. He was going to be Sergeant Slaughter, but that was going to be his gig, was he was going to be Swagger's manager. And he was going to feud with all of the Mexican stars. It was going to be not just Del Rio. It was going to be Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara as well. And then Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio both went down to injuries. And so there was just Del Rio and or maybe I misunderstood that Del Rio wasn't going to be a part of it. It was going to be the other two. But they had to kind of change things on the fly at the last minute, and that's what led to this feud. Do you think it's possible that was the problem, the fact that they had to do it so fast, they didn't just, you know, think it out really well? Or is this just a structural issue with WWE creative that we see time and again where they get close so many times? We've talked about it, you know, a number of times where this storyline or that storyline gets so very close to being good, and then it just falls apart. You think it was that, or do you think it, you know, might have been the fact that they were starting in a hole to begin with based upon what their original plan was?
That's definitely a possibility. I did listen to the interview, and I thought it was interesting that they even considered doing like a Jack Swagger as like the babyface kind of G.I. Joe American character too.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's obvious that they had a couple of ideas on the table. You know, I guess, you know, Rey Mysterio's knee has been questionable for quite some time, and Sin Cara has been out for quite some time. So you have to wonder exactly when, you know, this idea was formulated for Swagger, and maybe they kept him out longer than they intended on his hiatus because they just didn't have anything to go ready to go for him, ready-made. But, yeah, it definitely sounds like they painted themselves into a corner, or maybe, you know, injuries did that, and you know, it could have had an effect on the overall storyline. But, you know, even that being said, I still don't think the premise, you know, of the, you know, the American antagonist going after the Mexican hero is necessarily a winner in most of, you know, the U.S. unless they play it a very specific way. And, you know, down the stretch in that storyline, they didn't even execute it that well, so. I think execution was still the major problem with that storyline. They had something there. They just didn't do it very well.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to provide cover for WWE creative. They have their problems, and we've talked about those in depth at different times. But we don't always get this sort of information where it's like, hey, this was what they were thinking about doing at one point. I was involved with it, and then it switched to something else. And so when we do get this, it's always nice to kind of bring it into the conversation and see how we think it plays in. But, yeah, even if they were in a structural deficit from the beginning, you know, if they were in a hole they were trying to dig out of, I agree with you. I think the most telling thing is that they had something, they had a core of something there, and then down the stretch it just fell apart. They should have, you know, you would think if they were in a hole it would have been weak getting started and it never had enough time to build. Started not bad. It started pretty good. And then floundered a little bit, and then fell off the table. So, yeah, it was, but it's just interesting to hear what Sarge had to say about that. So, just something I wanted to bring in. And I guess the other news coming out of this show is that we're going, well, I don't even know that it means what we're going to see. That's kind of the thing. The main event was a tag match. You've got Randy Orton and Sheamus versus Mark Henry and Big Show. I assume this is going to lead to something with these four guys at Extreme Rules. It could be a singles match, could be two singles matches, could be a tag match. What's your gut telling you right now? What do you think we see at Extreme Rules?
You know, I wouldn't think they'd go back to a tag match again, so I'm going to guess we're going to get two singles matches. Probably Sheamus and Henry and Big Show and Orton, you know, stipulations and what'll be on the line, I'm not entirely sure, but, you know, I really hope it's a catalyst for something better for both Sheamus and Orton, whose characters are just, I don't know if you have the same opinion, but they just are not doing anything interesting for me right now from a character standpoint. I mean, I like them both in the ring and, you know, they're obviously, you know, both, I mean, Sheamus is less of a veteran than Orton, but they do have you know, a very strong presence in the ring. But I just don't buy into anything that they're doing, you know, behind the microphone. So I'm hoping this feud gives them, or these feuds give them a chance to kind of correct that. Otherwise, you know, they're kind of floundering at this point. So I'm expecting two singles matches, and I hope it leads to, you know, potential character changes or new rivalries for them, because they're kind of recycling through opponents now. It's getting a little bland on all fronts.
Yeah, I don't know. I part of me feels like they're going to end up in a fatal four-way, and maybe even a fatal four-way for, you know, a world championship shot. Maybe Dolph Ziggler's first opponent coming out of this, or first opponent outside of getting past this kind of rematch call situation, is going to come out of this match. It seems plausible to me. It also seems plausible because they were working up tension between Sheamus and Randy Orton prior to those two guys joining forces for the WrestleMania thing. I think they're going to get back to it. I think that's what all of this is leading up to. You know, Mark Henry and Big Show as the heels, they'll get along when they have to and turn on each other afterwards. I mean, all of that can be set up perfectly for a fatal four-way. Maybe not with the title shot on the line. I just think that, you know, that would make sense to me, plus because you've got to find Ziggler a new opponent going forward. But I don't know. They're definitely going to do something with these guys. I think all four of them are going to be involved. Even if it's two singles matches, I think they're going to end up involved in each other's matches in some way. I think these four are tied together for right now. But you're right. Sheamus and Orton are just kind of going along and working off of the fact that they're Sheamus and Orton. It feels phoned in. It feels, when I say that, I don't mean to say that they're not working hard in the ring and that sort of thing. It just comes across as phoned in. It comes across as very, you know, cut and dry, paint by numbers. The main event match, I think we both agree, was good. But, you know, I wouldn't kill myself to go see it. It was okay. If you sit through it, I'm sure you'll be happy with it, but you're not going to be at the end going, oh, my God, that was amazing. They did some good storytelling and had a couple of nice little spots there, some cool moments. But, you know, nothing really to get you excited. Just go, okay, that was good. I don't have anything wrong with that match. And that's what I think is the problem right now with a lot of WWE. So much of it that even, you know, that is good, it's just that. It's just good. It's not anything to be excited over. It's just, okay, I don't really have anything bad to say about that, but I don't really have any, I'm not exactly going to go call my friend and tell him about it either. Do you understand what I'm saying there? Do you think I think that's WWE's biggest problem, is that there's bad stuff and there's good stuff, but there's no exciting stuff.
Yeah, you know, for years it was kind of a constant stream of dream matches from WWE. I mean, they always had guys to bring in. You know, they were enforcing the brand split for a period, and so, you know, when guys finally got a chance to, you know, cross brands to have a match, or they brought somebody in who, you know, who was popular elsewhere, you know, they could count on that to give a shot in the arm to their main event scene. And I, you know, it's just not really happening anymore. It's been quite a while since, you know, anybody was built outside of WWE that could be brought in and be an impactful player on television. And it's been a while since they've really enforced the brand split or built a, you know, a homegrown star. You know, they have Cena, they have Punk. You know, Daniel Bryan was a surprise. But, you know, there's very few shots in the arm left, and they haven't really done a great job of of really making their talent in the lower to mid card succeed and climb up and be exciting. So I think it's just a problem of a lack of fresh matchups and poor character development. There's just not a lot of people who invest in on WWE right now. It's kind of a shame because I think they have the talent. It's just a matter of developing it on television.
Yeah, and they make just dumb decisions in the mid card too. I mean, you've got the two champions again facing each other again. We've had this. You know, if one's a babyface and one's a heel, it seems like they're going to put them together. Neither one of these guys needs the loss. Barrett just won the title back after dropping it for 24 hours. He might be the least impressive guy on the roster right now, and so they go job him out again. I mean, it's just it's nothing is exciting. What's good is just plain good, and what's bad is really, really bad. They're a fun creative, but they haven't been for some time, and I don't know. I part of me hopes that The Rock, what's going on with The Rock is that he just got mad and went home because things were not turning out the way he wanted, because it's not been great stuff, and maybe it'll shake up Vince McMahon. I doubt it. I mean, I seriously doubt it, but maybe it will. Maybe it'll be a wake-up call and things won't be so bland going forward, but at any rate, let's talk about this show. We're probably going to move through it fairly quickly because WWE seems to want to move through it quickly. I thought it was a quick 2 hours that went by. We get the opening narration video, of course, recaps what happened with Swagger, Del Rio, and Ziggler, and then also with Orton, Sheamus, Big Show, Mark Henry all being involved. They announced that would be the main event. And we opened with Fandango's music, Michael Cole, JBL, and Josh Matthews checking in on commentary. Look, I don't know why Cole is still on commentary on SmackDown. I thought Matthews was starting to find his groove fine with JBL. I don't know if JBL didn't like him, and so they had to add Michael Cole in. Because I've noticed Matthews and JBL bickering quite a bit, and I don't know if they're just playing off of each other, which certainly happens, or if there's some underlying dislike there between them, and that's why Cole is there. I don't know. They need to go back to the two-man booth on SmackDown. I think the three-man booth works well on Raw because Jerry Lawler's not the color guy he used to be. He's a voice that you recognize, and I think he brings some credibility to that. But I'm going a long way here to say they need to go back to the two-man booth at SmackDown. Sorry, I didn't mean to get up on a rant there, but it's been bugging me for a couple of weeks now. But Fandango, of course, makes his entrance, comes into the ring, lets his partner go. It's a different woman than we've seen in the past couple of weeks, at least it looked like. She may have had some extensions put in, and that did it, but it sure did look like a different person. At any rate, after he let her step out of the ring, he looked at Lillian. He slinked all over Lillian, wrapped his arm around her, got up real close, all those sorts of things, and took the microphone and said, hey, have you ever, I wonder if she'd ever made moves with someone before. I was looking for it in your report here. He made some other references. Of course, dancing is always pseudo-sexual on some level, so no real surprise there. He finally spun her around and dipped her, and while he had her dipped, he took the microphone again and said, Lillian, that was terrible, and dropped her on her hip. That drew great heat, and I thought it was a really smart move to make sure that everybody knows that he's heel. He got cheers when he first came out, and everybody was singing his song. But that, I really thought that was a neat way that they got some instant heel heat on him with Lillian. And I mean, she fell all of a couple of inches. It wasn't that big of a deal. But at that point, she left the ring at that point, and he said, everybody, she's just like the other. She just butchers his name. He started to say it correctly, but he got to the first syllable. Santino's music hits. Santino comes to the ring with a mic, calls him Fandango. Says he's being insulting, says that he wants to dance as well, and wanted to introduce his dance partner who's mean and green, and he can fandingle all night, and he pulled out the cobra, and of course danced around like a goof, having a seizure with the sock on his arm, and they go finally charged at him, and Santino pulled the top rope down gimmick, and Fandango fell to the floor with the commercial break. It was a fun little cute thing with Santino. That was cool and whatnot. But the thing I really thought was well done, it was such a simple thing, was the Lillian gimmick. He dropped her down. She fell, all of 6 inches a foot. She wasn't hurt. No risk of her really getting hurt. It's not like they put her in a dangerous situation. It was very simple, and boom, instantly the crowd starts just raining booze on him. Just to remind you guys, you might cheer my entrance theme, and that's cool, but I'm still a heel. fantastic stuff, Jim.
Yeah, I thought this was far better than what they had him do on Monday. You know, it was much better structured. It fit with the dancing gimmick. I thought Lillian, you know, with her facial expressions and everything else, just sold it as perfectly as she could have. And you know, it reinforced exactly what they wanted to reinforce with this character. And I think the dancer was the same one they had on Monday, but it was different this week than it had been prior to the WrestleMania, and going back to his debut. So I'm not sure why the change in dancer, but this one was different this week. But yeah, the whole structure of the, you know, of the promo was perfect. And I, you know, Santino is what he is. I mean, he's lighthearted comedy, and I thought it was a decent comic relief to have him come out to the defense of Lillian, and she, you know, she played it up with the crowd too, with you know, cheering for him and laughing while he was dancing and everything. So I thought it was a decent, lighthearted segment to open the show, and it also managed to, you know, to get Fandango back over as a heel with that crowd, which, you know, it was, sounded like it would be a challenge based on the heavy applause he got when his music hit.
Yeah, they cheered it when it came out, and I was like, ooh, and then bam, instant heel heat. I was like, oh, well done, guys. I can't complain. And it's so funny, my only problem with the Santino gimmick is that it was one of two, and that's always kind of my argument. There's a place for one of these on the show. And unfortunately, both of them got soured because we ended up with a second one later. Not him, but a second comedy bit. We'll talk about that in a minute. But after commercial, it was our first match of the night. Fandango defeating Santino Marella at 3 minutes and 11 seconds. Finish on this comes when Fandango, it is his finisher that I really like. He acts like he's dipping his opponent in a dance move. And then pulls all the way back and goes back into, you know, some sort of face buster or neck breaker.
John Morrison used to call it the moonlight drive. It's like a corkscrew neck breaker type thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's I think it works well for him, and I like it so much better than the top rope leg drop, which is just going to shorten his career. So very happy with that, man. I mean, you know, it was what it was. Santino match, 3 minute match, but you know, Fandango looked good, and I really like this. I hope this stays his finisher and they get away from that top rope leg drop.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. You know, the match wasn't anything to write home about, but I was happy to see him use a new finisher. And, you know, there was some decent comedy in the ring with Santino, as always. You know, the Cobra is over, much to my chagrin a lot of the time. But it was a fun match, and the right guy won, and he got some heat as he was dancing away like usual. So, I mean, it's working for what they're for tonight. You know, it depends on how they continue to follow it up. But I think the more inventive they can get in terms of getting him, you know, getting him heat while he's, you know, getting cheered by these crowds is going to be, you know, a huge boon for them. Because it could be tough depending on how, you know, how much this Fandango thing can pick off for him.
Yeah, London next week is going to be a nightmare to try to get them to boo him, because they're going to want to cheer him. I mean, I don't know if people know or not, if you haven't seen the news on the site, but it made like the top, in one day it made the top, almost the top 10 on downloads on the UK charts, his theme, and then like overall for the month or something like that, or it's a continuous tracking, whatever, it made the top 100. So that crowd's going to be a nightmare trying to get the boo. So did start with this. Of course, he did his name gimmick afterwards. Then we cut backstage to Teddy Long and Booker T. They're going at it again. Booker T's trying to explain why he was frustrated with Teddy and how because Teddy's been getting involved in doing all this stuff. When Big Show shows up and thanks Teddy Long for putting him in a tag match as opposed to a handicap match, they did the fist bump thing, and Teddy said no problem. He walked off. Booker pulled his glasses off and looked the spirit at Teddy, and that's when Teddy went, oh, hey, show, wait up, and went off, so he didn't have to take the ass chewing from Booker. Two things on this. One, I still don't care. Two, Jake, what the hell was up with Booker's hair? It just looked weird this week. I'm not usually that guy, but he had all his dreads pulled up in like a bun. It was, I don't know, it wasn't a good look for him, I didn't think.
You know, to be honest, I really didn't notice it that much, so I can't really comment on it. But the segment itself, you know, it just furthers that whole GM drama. I mean, we don't know where it's going, but so far they haven't really done a very good job of convincing us to care, and that's really the worst part about it. You know, I mean, the Booker and Teddy are friends, and I'm sure they, you know, they can work out some decent chemistry and backstage conflict if they wanted to, but I just don't know why I should care about you know, the internal strife of the general managers. I mean, it doesn't seem to you know, to carry much weight anymore. But I didn't necessarily mind the performances here. I'm just not into what they're doing. But I'll have to go back and take a look at Booker's hair to see if I can point out what you're talking about.
Yeah, it just looked weird to me. I don't know. It was like a growth coming out of the back of his head the way they had it. It didn't look right. I don't know. I don't know why I'm even caring all that much. I just, when he appeared on the screen, I was like, hey, what have you done? But anyway, yeah, I don't get it. When Teddy Long was going through the whole Oksana thing, I remember I would get hate mail from people when I was complaining about it. Because I would say Teddy Long is not a sympathetic character. People go, yes, he was. He's very sympathetic. I want to see Oksana get her due and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, man, I'm not buying it. You're one. You're one of millions who, you know, that, or one out of millions that care. But even if you could, I'm more ready to believe the idea that Teddy Long is sympathetic than I am Teddy Long as a maniacal heel. You know, it's like, that's the problem, is that's where it seems like it's going, and I just can't buy Teddy Long as the maniacal heel. It's just not going to happen. It's not the right point in his career. We've seen him be a schmuck too many times. I'm not going to buy it. After commercial, we get our second match of the night, and here we go. Kofi Kingston defeating Wade Barrett, 5 minutes and 28 seconds. You know, pretty good match for what it was, you know, for being a 5-minute match. But the finish on this comes, Kofi jumped up for something, Barrett called him, and basically hit something like a white noise, a kryptonite crunch. It was more sideways than it was diagonal, but you know, kind of like a low Samoan drop, maybe you want to call it. But he dropped down like that. He stayed in that position. He hooked the leg, the closest leg, and so he was doing a reclining like tap or reclining like pin. And so Kofi reversed it into a crucifix and got the 1-2-3. And so, you know, Barrett looks like a schmuck as opposed to, you know, getting beat clean. But dear God, Jake, why do you book this match? Neither one of these guys need the loss. How could you possibly book this match?
I'm not sure. But if I was gonna book it, I just have him brawl to a count out or something. I mean, I don't know why you need to book the match, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Neither one needed the loss, and the, you know, the way they took to get to the finish. I mean, it just made, you know, it made Barrett look lazy and disrespectful of Kofi, which I guess, I mean, maybe they were going for, in a sense, you know, he's the heel, he should disrespect his opponents, but, I mean, it just made him look silly, stupid. I mean, why? Because the way he racked him up, he could not have been in a more perfect position to be, you know, rolled right into a crucifix. So, I don't know. I mean, obviously that was the plan, and that's the way it played out. But, why would you make your cerebral heel Intercontinental Champion look like a complete doofus? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't even know why you put them in the match. Because like you said, if you're going to have them brawl to a draw and you know, because they don't do time limits anymore in WWE, but yeah, if you end up with some sort of schmoz or a draw where neither guy looks bad, neither guy looks good, or, you know, they look good because they get to that draw, that's fine, I guess. But this, just why? I don't get it. I don't even know why you put them in the ring together. Such a dumb move. But it just shows how little they care about the mid-card anymore. We went backstage, we got a video recap of Mark Henry knocking Sheamus down the past couple of weeks. You know, every time he'd be cutting an interview, Henry would just come up, knock him down, spear him to some degree, and then yell at him. And so, of course, what happens? Renee Young stops and hey, I remembered her name. That's a lie. I read it off of Jake's report. But Renee Young stops Mark Henry, starts to ask him a question about Sheamus, but, of course, Sheamus spears him into a barricade that was backstage, stands up and says, "That's what I do, fella," and walked away. Jake, did you like it?
Kind of predictable, I guess. I mean, as soon as Henry was walking backstage and he got stopped for an interview and you saw the table behind him, kind of figured what was coming. But, you know, it was all right. I mean, I don't know why Sheamus has to add fella on the end of all of his sentences. But, I mean, it accomplished what it set out to do. I don't have anything to to say bad about it. I mean, I still don't know why these guys are just randomly attacking each other. Hopefully they actually explain it at some point.
My guess is that Henry's attacking because that's what Mark Henry does. And I'm guessing Sheamus attacked him back because that's what he does, fella. That's what they told us so far anyway. So I guess that's what we've got to go with. I thought it looked good. I thought it was a good visual. But, yeah, it was kind of predictable. And Sheamus standing over him. The thing I didn't like about it, though, is that it didn't really go anywhere. It didn't translate to anything extra in the ring. It didn't really put heat on the match. It just, because it was predictable, it happened in your life. Okay, we got that out of the way. It didn't, you know what I'm saying? It was almost like a wasted effort for me. So that's the only thing I found disappointing about it. We got a really nice video package, I thought, of Dolph Ziggler's title win and everything that happened on Monday with, you know, Del Rio coming out and attacking Swagger after Swagger was able to beat Ziggler. And that led, after a commercial break, that led to our third match of the night, Alberto Del Rio defeating Jack Swagger in 17 minutes and 12 seconds. A good match, one you should go out of your way to see. It's a really good TV match. And as Jake put it in his report, they were better down the stretch in this match than they were at WrestleMania. This is the match I thought we would get at WrestleMania, but we got it here. Really good match. I get annoyed with some of the reversals with the ankle lock into the arm bar and vice versa. But, you know, putting that aside, I really good match on this. The finish on it comes with Del Rio going for the arm breaker, screaming destiny as he was going for the arm breaker. Swagger reverses, ends up back in the arm bar. Swagger rolls him up for a pin. But Del Rio slips out of it at that point, and out of the kick out, he reaches up and grabs Swagger and pulls him down for a small package for the victory. So it was a surprise victory. Swagger, you know, in the ring yelling about it. He looks great in the loss. The timing of that small package was just really good. It was kick out right into the small package. The ref count, I thought, should have been a little bit faster just because of the energy of it. But the crowd loved it. They popped big for it. It was just a good match, and I don't think Swagger loses anything, and Del Rio, I think, even got a little bit of a lift out of it.
Yeah, I would actually agree on pretty much all fronts there. I really enjoyed the match, you know, just covering it. It was well paced. You know, they didn't get out of the gates too quickly, and they managed to elevate the pace of the match as they went along. And gradually, up until, you know, maybe the last 5 minutes when they really kind of kicked it into gear, and I thought that last 5 minutes was probably better than what we saw from them at WrestleMania. And, you know, this was a 17-minute match, and you covered WrestleMania. You might remember the time on their Mania match. I think that was closer to 10 minutes. And, yeah, so I think this was probably the match we should have saw had they, you know, they timed out that show a little differently. But, yeah, it was a great TV match. I think Del Rio gained quite a bit, you know, with the way it played out with his, you know, fighting through the leg injury, and they had some nice psychology with his leg being hurt and him working over Swagger's shoulders throughout the match and Swagger struggling with that. So, yeah, I thought it was, you know, good for both guys overall. I also liked the lack of interference. Coulter and Ricardo just kind of stayed at ringside and let those two guys, you know, just have the match. And so, yeah, I liked everything about that.
Yep, go out of the way you see it, folks. Go out of your way to see it. I promise you it will not be a waste of your time. We went to commercial. When we came back, Michael Cole set up a video that recapped Ryback's promo from Monday as well as the confrontation afterwards and the Shield attack. He was continuing to talk about it when the Shield appeared on the screen. Dean Ambrose, again, handling the bulk of the promo work, said that Ryback now knows he knows what justice feels like, and that's why he left Cena alone in the ring on Monday. He said they saw the look on Ryback's face. It was the same look they saw on The Undertaker's face on the Monday before, and that was fear. They said he was absolutely terrified of Undertaker. They almost had a comedic moment where Ambrose was like, I saw it. And he was, we all saw it, and then Rollins immediately, I saw it, and Reigns was like, me too. I mean, it was borderline silly how they were doing it. I think they were going for a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, so it was kind of cute. But anyway, they said it was fear. They said that while Undertaker might be undefeated at WrestleMania, they were just plain undefeated. Rollins stepped in at that point and said the Undertaker's era of dominance was over. Reigns' line said that the Dogs of War would take down the Big Dog, and then we should believe in the Shield, and of course that went around. That was the end of the promo. I'm still so frustrated with these guys because I don't know, you know, what their motivation is anymore. They keep talking about justice, but it's not clear what justice means to them. Again, it doesn't have to be perfectly explained out, and of course it doesn't even have to be really what justice is because they're heels, but I need to understand what they mean by justice. So it's frustrating because I feel like we're missing these chunks of it, but I love this stuff. I mean, as far as just the way they're doing it, as good as Ambrose is on the mic, Rollins and Reigns continue to just lay in the perfect amount of words and let Ambrose do the bulk of the talking. They're really booking these guys well. They're just not giving them that well-rounded-out storyline that can turn them into larger-than-life characters.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what's been missing. We just don't know enough about the Shield's definition of justice. And a lot of times, perhaps a little bit of mystery is okay, but, they have the wrong type of mystery here. I mean, they do have that mystique about them where you never know, when to expect them to show up, and except when WWE's camera people give them away. But, the justice thing, I wish they would kind of cover more ground with it. I mean, they started to kind of explain it when they said Ryback, in walking away from John Cena and allowing him to take that beating, kind of finally felt what justice felt like. I'm like, oh, maybe they're going to explain it here. And then they went right into The Undertaker. So, that was as far as they got. But I'm surprised they haven't mentioned the tag titles at all, especially in this promo, since they're going to be with Team Hell No on Monday as well. I was thinking that perhaps they'd launch into a tag title feud at some point here. Maybe that'll come later. But I didn't necessarily think the promo was excellent, but it wasn't bad. I mean, I like, when these guys are talking, they have a good cadence, and they seem to, be crisp on the microphone. I just wish we had that little storyline to bite into, but maybe that'll come here in a week or two.
Everything fell apart at that point. Great Khali made his ring entrance, and it was groan time after commercial break. Rosa and Primo were shown in the ring. They, having made their entrance, they showed a clip from earlier. They can't even set this shit up in the ring. They just have to go and find some way to make – just put them in the ring. We get so many ridiculous matches that don't make sense anyway as to why we're having it. So why not just put these six idiots in the ring and be done with it? Instead, they had to show this video of where Primo, Epico, and Rosa pulled into a parking space before the car, driven by Hornswoggle, by the way, that was carrying Khali, and the Khali could pull into the space. So they argued over the space, and the end of it was Khali stepping in and putting his finger up on his head in the shape of the L, calling the Puerto Ricans losers. I want to rage about this, but I'm not going to waste the time and the effort. Fourth match, Khali and Natalya Hornswoggle defeat Rosa, Primo, and Epico in 2 minutes and 49 seconds. Khali, of course, hitting the Punjabi Sludge on Epico for the win. This is what I'm talking about. Santino by himself, great. Santino followed by this later in the show, come on.
Yeah, I guess the thing that really stood out to me is, whenever you see, like, Natalya hit, like, a discus clothesline or, some really technical kind of wrestling hold in the ring, you're just reminded of just how wasted she is, the talent, being involved with these two. I mean, that's the thing that really burns me. It's like you have a women's champion that's struggling to find a credible heel opponent, and you have Natalya doing the comedy gimmick with Khali and Hornswoggle. It's like, she had that thing going with Beth Phoenix for a long time where she was, quite a good female heel, and they just have her stuck doing this. It seems to me like she would be the person to move into a title feud as a heel with Caitlyn. The rest of these guys I couldn't, care less about, to be honest with you. They just don't do anything for me. But Natalya seems like she has a lot of wasted talent, and it could be used right now if they wanted to. It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, amongst other things, amongst all the other problems, that is one as well. Oh, God, let's move on. We got a video recaps most of Punk's promo from Monday, and including the hug and leaving the arena. The announcer said that he was, obviously, he was conflicted. I'm sure there'll be more explanations for that on Monday. Then after commercial, the Raw Rebound video aired that showed Lesnar taking apart 3MB. Just real quick, Jake, I on the .NET Wednesday this week, I said that there ought to be a Worker of the Week award or Corporate Guy of the Week award maybe, and send that to Heath Slater because, oh, my God, those F5s onto the barricade made my hips just ache watching.
Yeah, that was heinous, man. I watched it again before we recorded the countdown on Wednesday because we were going to talk about it, and, man, that looked vicious. I mean, I don't know if Lesnar necessarily attempted to do it that particular way, if he was trying to land him on his abdomen or something like that. But I mean, both times, the first time it was like right on his groin, and then the second time it was more on his knees, and it's just like, oh, that cannot feel good for anybody. But I was impressed with how good 3MB made Lesnar look there. That was an impressive beating on Monday for sure.
Yeah, I hope that I know Lesnar doesn't really go to the after party sort of things or go to the bar afterwards, but I hope he showed up long enough to buy Heath Slater a drink. Oh, good God,
yeah.
Terrible! Wow. But anyway, Mark Henry's re-entrance happens. We get a recap of what happened between he and Sheamus earlier. Everybody else has their entrances, and then with commercial breaks in between, and that led to our fifth and final match of the night: Big Show and Mark Henry defeating Sheamus. And Randy Orton, not Sheamus and Big Show, typo in your report. Big Show and Mark Henry defeating Sheamus and Randy Orton at 15 minutes and 10 seconds. Very cool finishing sequence on this. We had Randy Orton hitting one rope DDT on Mark Henry and then Show breaking it up. Show tags in at that point, but Orton hits the big rope DDT on him with Show's rope feet on the top rope. The only thing they screwed up here was one foot slipped off and Show had to put his other foot up. They covered it fairly well with camera work, but everybody in the ring had to see it, and everybody watching was like, oh, wait, his foot's down, now it's back up. So if you thought about it, that was an unfortunate thing to happen, but they recovered from it. He hits the DDT, Orton does on him. Henry runs in, Sheamus runs in, they spill to the floor, Orton kind of watches it played out, turns around and takes a chokeslam from a recovered Big Show for the victory. The heels needed the win, they got it. It was fluky, but not too fluky. It still ended up being a good win for the heels. And this is a match, if you sit down and decide to watch it, I don't think you're going to be mad at yourself for watching it, but it's not one that I would chase down to see by any stretch of the imagination. Again, obviously they're setting up something for Extreme Rules. It's hard to analyze too much at this point. Dave, we talked about it, what little there is, the kind of at the top of the show. So it's just not clear yet where they're going, but we do agree on this, that the right guys won because the heels needed to look strong finally after the way Sheamus and Randy Orton have just manhandled Big Show for the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. I really was happy to see the heels pick up the win here. I thought the match was fairly good. They didn't do a whole lot of the overly predictable stuff, just when you thought they were going to kind of go into long stretches of one team hitting, their signature offense. They managed to break it up and keep it interesting in that sense. There was that one dangerous kind of looking, I don't know if it was a mistake or just a bad angle or something, right at the end when Sheamus cleared Mark Henry from the ring, he kind of speared him to the outside. It looked kind of awkward. I was worried Henry was going to land weird on his knee, but it seemed like he was fine. And then the choke slam for the win. But yeah, they definitely needed the win there. And I'll be interested to see where they go with it on Monday. They seem to show a little bit of unity at the end there with Henry and Big Show kind of celebrating together. But I don't know, it's pretty easy to sow some dissent if you want to. But if you want to do if you want to execute the fatal four-way idea that you were talking about. But I'm happy to see the heels get some of their heat back. And then I'm actually interested to see more. If they're able to further develop, Sheamus and Randy Orton heading into Extreme Rules, because those characters need a little bit of polish and refurbishing to get back to being what they were a couple of years ago. Because it seems like they've been doing the same thing on SmackDown for 2 years.
Right. Yeah, I keep hoping for the Randy Orton heel turn. Not that I necessarily want to see Randy Orton as a heel again, but because Orton wants to be a heel. I think he'll work more inspired as a heel. He's shown that he doesn't mind putting guys over. He did great business for the SmackDown brand for a couple of years. So, you know, and there's some baby faces that could use some help. If you need to stay baby face long enough to help give a lift to Dolph Ziggler at the world title level, I would be perfectly okay with that. But I hope his heel turn is coming soon because, again, I think he works inspired, and an inspired Randy Orton can be a good thing. A petulant Randy Orton can be a terrible thing. And, he's very tied to emotional swings. And so I kind of want to see him get, plugged in and engaged again. This is a way of getting there by having, he and Sheamus feud coming out of this. But, yeah, I don't know where they're going yet. I'm sure we'll see more on Monday. Extreme Rules is next Sunday, so they've got to hurry up and finalize all these matches. And we're going to, get the answer for Triple H on Raw as well. I'm sure that the answer on that is yes for his cage match with Brock Lesnar. And a whole lot more of booking will be there on Monday night. Jason Powell will have coverage for you guys Monday night, as well as an audio review of that show. That will be exclusive to our members. Again, if you want to be a .NET member, just head over to ProWrestling.net. Click on the right-hand side of the page for .NET member sign up and become a .NET member today. Jake, anything you want to add about the show before we get out of here?
No, I think we covered everything. Just have a good weekend, everybody.
Yep, and Jake and I will be back next Saturday as well for the final SmackDown heading into WWE's next pay-per-view, Extreme Rules. Until then, everyone have a fantastic weekend and take care.